WEVD, New York.
WLTH, Brooklyn, New York.
WCNW, operating on a frequency of 50.
Before Dr. Ruth, before Dr. Laura was even born, there was C. Israel Lutsky, one of the first advice columnists of the air.
Starting in 1933, 5 days a week, for more than 30 years, Lutsky read letters and dispensed guidance to his Jewish immigrant audience. He called himself and his program the Yiddish Philosoph, the Jewish philosopher. Although his credentials weren't quite so impressive as that title suggested, before crowning himself the Jewish philosopher, Lutsky was a vaudeville comedian and an amateur boxer.
Still, despite his dubious qualifications and an abrasive on-air presence, evident in the few recordings that survive, the Jewish philosopher became one of the best-known figures in the history of Yiddish radio.
Today's installment of our Yiddish radio project is told by the man who was the philosopher's one-time English language announcer.
This is Dick Sugar, and I worked on the Yiddische Philosoph, the Jewish philosopher, from 1946 to 1957 on radio station WEVD. No recordings of the shows that I announced on exist, but I have no problem remembering how that introduction used to go. Ladies and gentlemen, time once again to join radio's most interesting Jewish personality, the Jewish philosopher.
Gott helfach, meine liebe Freund.
C. Israel Lutsky, a red-faced little man with one of the biggest egos I've encountered in my 56 years in radio. Every weekday at 2 p.m., Lutsky would go on the air to read questions from his listeners. I'd watch through the control room window as he'd work himself up into a frenzy, waving his arms and spitting and berating his audience. A half century ago, you just didn't yell on the radio like that. But the more he lambasted his audience, the more they seemed to love him. Let's listen now to the Yiddische Philosoph in action. Karl Reiner is the English voice of C. Israel Lutsky.
Gott helfach, meine liebe Freund. Meine liebe Freund.
God help you, my dear friends. My dear friends, I have here a letter from a listener whose initials are NG, and she writes thus. My son, friend philosopher, who is 36 years old, was left a widower 3 years ago with a young child of 5 years. Last year, he married an old maid who's about a year younger than him, and it seems to me that he has not made a very smart move. Firstly, she knows nothing about how to prepare a good meal. Furthermore, when she comes to visit, she always holds his hand from the minute they both sit down until the minute they go home. Truth to be told, my son doesn't look so bad that I can complain that she doesn't cook as well as me or his first wife. No, my husband says not to mix in so much. But what does he know about what a real mother feels who wants to see her son only happy and content? I beg you then, my heartfelt friend philosopher, tell me if I am acting like a bad mother-in-law or a good true mother. I remain your longtime listener, Mrs. N.G.
Mrs. N.G. My dear Mrs. N.G.,
I can glean from your brief little letter whether you're indeed a good mother or a bad mother-in-law. But one thing is positively clear, that you lack common sense. My answer to you is found in those four English words.
Mind your own business.
Which is the same thing your husband said to you in a more gingerly, delicate way. Considering that you won't listen to your own husband's advice, how can I, a stranger, hope that you would take my advice? As I said earlier, it's hard for me to figure out whether you are a good mother or a lousy mother-in-law. But one thing is not hard to see. You are, in fact, a foolish Jewish woman.
The Jewish philosopher's sponsor was Carnation Milk. Lutsky was fanatical about the product. He always kept a white carnation pinned to his lapel and would spend his vacations visiting carnation canneries across the country, traipsing around like a king. His approach to the commercials, well, sometimes it seemed like only Lutsky himself understood what he was talking about.
My dears, you probably heard the story of a young man who wanted everything. I mean, when it came to wanting, he knew how to want. But when it came to doing, nothing doing. I know dozens of young men like this, and probably so do you. People who want everything, but just can't take it. There's a term for this in English that sums it up, and this little word is
allergic.
So if you catch my drift, this one is allergic to boiled onions, this one is allergic to calf's foot jelly, and a third, and there are thousands of these number threes, a third can't handle milk. But science comes forward and helps such people. How? By inventing the miracle of carnation milk.
Carnation milk.
You allergic schmergic, what's it to me?
Allergic schmergic.
If you want the very tastiest, the very best, the most dependable and digestible and nutritious form of milk, do as I tell you and buy and use wonderful carnation milk. The milk recommended to you over and over again by your friend, the Yiddish philosopher.
Der Yiddisher Philosoph.
Israel Lutsky was also a shameless self-promoter. In November 1937, he actually put out a magazine dedicated to himself. Only one issue was ever published.
This publication is founded around a forceful and magnetic personality, the most outstanding and most widely known Jewish radio oracle. It even bears the same name, his name, which he has made a household term in every Jewish household. The Jewish philosopher has stayed the hands of self-executioners.
Despite his self-indulgent streak, Lutsky remains one of the most vividly remembered and best adored characters from the golden age of Yiddish radio. He never shied away from difficult topics and often addressed issues you wouldn't hear anywhere else on the air. Let's take a few moments and listen to this letter from a Holocaust survivor, broadcast at a time when most people didn't want to talk about, hear about, or even think about what happened to the Jews of Europe.
I'm sure, dear people, that no introduction is needed for this letter which I now hold in my hand. Dear friend philosopher opens the letter. I have wanted to send this to you many times, but I kept putting it off. I'm a newly arrived immigrant. I'm 30 years old and survived the hellish suffering of the Hitler years in Europe. I lost my father, my mother, three brothers and their wives and children, and two sisters and their in-laws. I lost all my uncles, aunts, and every other close relative, who, altogether, total a family of over 50 people who I loved and knew intimately. I really don't know if I consider myself lucky or unlucky that I was the only one to survive in the entire family. One alone on God's green earth. For my life, I paid a very dear price. I was dragged through six different concentration camps, and several times I stood poised to be sent to the gas chambers. After the war, I decided I couldn't remain in Poland, so I waited just like all the others waited, and many still wait, so I can come to America. From the first minute I arrived, I was in love with America. I loved everything I saw, and the feeling overwhelmed me so that I kissed the earth. But I have no one to tell my problems. I have a mark, friend philosopher. I have a brand, and this is seared in my flesh.
Number.
A number.
Of the linker hand.
Of my left arm.
The number.
The number. Of the ghastly death camp.
Auschwitz.
Auschwitz. In winter, no one sees the number. I wear a dress with long sleeves, sometimes a sweater, sometimes a coat. But when it's summertime in the New York heat, I have to wear a sleeveless dress. So here begins the hundreds of questions. Where does it come from? How did it happen? To my great disappointment, I found that the vast majority of people interested in the number seared on my left arm had no inkling of what this was. They never heard of the camps or the gas chambers, or that they burned numbers into the arms. These are Jews I'm speaking of. And some even thought that maybe I had tattooed a number on myself, like a sailor tattoos flowers or pictures of their wife on their arms. They did not know that this number was tattooed with an indelible ink which cannot be washed out, and that the number 81,568 illustrates that I was the 81,568th one at Auschwitz. About that, they don't know. When it's winter, I feel lucky. No questions and no painful answers. Now, dear friend philosopher, summer is coming and I am enveloped in fear. What should I do? How should I hide myself to avoid these stupid questions? I beg you to help me. Your devoted listener, Mrs. M.G.
Mrs. Mem Gimel.
My very dear friend, Mrs. M.G., I have to tell you that your letter really upset me. I am ashamed that among our Jews, one can still find people who do not know what happened in the camps. But I would like to know, what kind of places do you go to meet such people who don't know what happened to the Jews of Europe? I have to say here, my beloved Mrs. M.G., that I have to defend the lion's share of American Jews, because we American Jews know everything. Jews in America know everything. It cannot be true what you say about American Jews. Among Jewish Jews, you'll find that people do indeed know about your suffering and pain. Possibly those people you meet at the beach somewhere by the seaside. I don't know what kind of people they are. But you can't convince me that the Jews don't know. We know about the tragic chapter in our Jewish history.
In unserer jüdischer Geschichte.
And so, another episode of the Jewish Philosopher Program would come to an end. In apartments and stores all over New York, listeners would pause, let the word sink in, and then go back to whatever they were doing before the broadcast started. In our studio, C. Israel Lutsky would wipe the steam off his glasses, slap his papers together, stick his cigar back in his mouth, and strut out into the hallway. The engineer would open up my mic and I'd say, The Jewish Philosopher is presented over station WEVD Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. Tune in again tomorrow afternoon and every afternoon Monday through Friday when the Carnation Company will again bring you your friend and advisor, the Jewish Philosopher. This is Dick Sugar bidding you a pleasant day.
The Jewish Philosopher stayed on the air in New York until 1963. Israel Lutsky died in 1983 at the age of 84. Special thanks for production help this week to Isaiah Scheffer and to the American Jewish Archives.
Next week on the Yiddish Radio Project, the story of Seymour Rexite, called by some the Frank Sinatra of Yiddish radio. For more questions and answers from the Jewish Philosopher, you can visit our website, npr.org.